Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, all, and welcome to Happy Hour here again with Jenna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we are back with yet another riveting show that you will not be able to leave the radio for. Hi, ladies.
Well, hello, Frankenberry and Curly.
You. This is segment one. You indicated you had a story. Do you not have a story?
Oh, no. I mean, I have something that I want to talk to you guys about. Actually, I don't... It's not.
And when you say talk, do you mean complain? I'm just not sure. Just trying to get clear.
No, I don't think it's a complaint.
Okay.
Well, Carol and I can be the judges of that. But go ahead.
Okay, we're gonna play a game. We're gonna shake things up, and we're gonna play a game. Okay?
All right.
And the game. I'll give you the name of the game, and I will say it with enthusiasm. Okay. Are you ready?
Ready.
Enthusiastically ready, as a matter of fact.
Okay, welcome to the first ever edition of Does Jenna Have a Stalker or Is She Just a Paranoid Freak? Are you guys ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And I believe the answer could lie anywhere in between those two.
All right. This has been plaguing me. So
is this the guy at the parking garage, or do we have somebody new?
Oh no, this is totally new. Okay. Totally new. All right. Here is the sitch. Frankenberry, for the uncool, that's short for situation. Okay.
Thank you very much. Hold on. I'm going to write that down.
Okay. Now let me preface this by saying that I have recently watched a show on Netflix or one of those streaming services called The Watcher. I don't know if any of you have gotten into that show. Have you gotten into that show?
No, but I know where it's going.
I've read about the show. I've read the plot line, but I haven't watched an episode yet.
All right. So briefly, I'll just tell you the plot of that show is that a family moves into this beautiful house in New Jersey. And as soon as they move in, they start getting weird letters in their mailbox from somebody who identifies him or herself as the Watcher, who's basically admitting to being some sort of stalker of this house. I'll leave it there. Now, that's not what happened to me, but keep in mind, I've been watching that show. So now.
Oh, great.
As you guys know, and as most of our listeners know, I have neither servants nor a husband, which means I take out my own garbage, okay? Every week. Every Monday night, the garbage cans have to go to the top of the driveway. Garbage people come on Tuesdays. And then, you know, sometime on Tuesday, I put the garbage cans back in their rightful place. Okay.
And you do that fully dressed with 5-inch heels. We know this much.
Yes.
And one time I did it without a bra on accidentally. Okay. So this week was no different, except that when I put the cans out on Monday, on Tuesday morning when I was leaving the house, I had court early, so I was leaving the house early. The recycle people had come, but the garbage collection people had not. So I took the recycle can only, and I put it back in its rightful place. Now, when I put my cans back to where they go, I am lazy. So I push them in. You know, if you have to do this yourself, people, there's a handle on one side of the garbage can, and then the other side of the garbage can is where the lid comes up. So I push it in with the handles facing out, which is awfully inconvenient when you do need to open the lid, because now you got to reach around, open the lid. But that's how I do it. It's always done. So I put the recycle back, handle out facing the driveway. The other can is still waiting for it to get picked up. Okay, fast forward. Nighttime comes. I come home. And when I come home, both of my garbage cans are in their spot. But are they handle out? No, they're handle in, which means that somebody, not only like maybe a nice neighbor, put my garbage can in, but then they had to take the time to flip my recycle can 180 degrees so that it was the opposite direction of where I put it in the morning. Now, it gets worse.
You got an anal stalker. Nice.
So now, because this is how my brain works, I come home, it's dark, I notice the cans, I notice that somebody obviously touched them, and I say to myself, fantastic, I have a stalker. So I go to sleep that night. The next day, I have to put more garbage in the can, and I walk up to the cans. Do I just whip open the lid with wild abandon to throw my stuff in there? No, I don't. Why? Why, Curly? Because now I'm convinced that there's explosives attached to my garbage can.
Oh, my gosh.
Guys, now, fortunately, there was not. Like, I gingerly opened it. I was waiting for a booby trap. I was waiting for an explosion. I was waiting for a dead body part. I was waiting for something. I didn't see it. And I didn't peek inside because I ain't going there. I ain't going there. But I ask you, with those facts, is John being stalked or is she a paranoid freak?
I'm going to go with paranoid freak.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards that as well. And did you go down your list of potentials like your father, your mother, your
I did that.
Boyfriend?
Nobody.
So of your neighbors, are there any of your neighbors that would do you just a simple kindness, but at the same time be kind of OCD about it?
Well, isn't that the $64,000 question?
I'm just asking.
I can understand. Now, in the 8 years that I have lived in this little love shack, not a single time has one of my neighbors touched my cans. And I'm saying that to be funny. Garbage.
Yes. I will let you go with that as opposed to me saying you might want to rephrase that because you beat me to it.
Nobody has ever taken my cans from the street and moved them into the rightful spot. Now, even if that were so, if that had happened and one can was in backwards and the can that I put in was in frontwards, I would be like, oh, a neighbor must have done that. That was nice. But because they were both in the wrong direction, that's the part that's got me.
And what about all your cameras?
Well, you know, if the world must know, my cameras don't capture the very top of the driveway.
Oh, but what about where your cans end up?
Well, my cans are always at the top of the driveway. I never
know. No, but would somebody brought them back to the house and set them? So that spot where they sit by the house.
Oh, no, they don't sit by the house. They're always at the top of the driveway. I have a little, so my cans are special, Carol. I have a little carve out, a little nook. I have a little can nook, and that's where they go. So I don't have to look at them.
You're totally being paranoid then. Yeah. I thought somebody rolled them back down your driveway and turned them around. Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Carol.
Nope. Anybody walking down the street could have pushed it.
You guys
3 feet
and flip it around.
Yeah. Maybe it was even the people that got the trash that did that. John.
Oh, no. The people who pick up my trash. No, here's what they like to do. They like to leave my cans like they ran them over in the front of the driveway, like all topsy turvy. They love to do that so that I have to struggle to pick them up. And sometimes when there's a big wind, when I struggle to pick them up, the lid flies open, boom, smashes me right in the face. They would never in a million years put my cans all nice, neat and tidy in the little nook that I have created for said cans.
Now, I'm sorry. I just can't help but laughing at all the uses of cans and how funny it is.
Paranoid. Final answer.
Paranoid. Yeah.
Whole time you were telling the story, I thought you, like most people, roll their cans out to the end of the driveway to get picked up, then roll them back up towards the house. No, you have a cutout out by the street that anybody walking down the street can have access to. So
right, and you never know, Jonna, when they picked up your garbage, it's certainly possible that when they left the can down, it might have been in the road a little bit, and somebody was just moving it out
Frank
of the road.
Frank and Mary, that's exactly what happened.
And that person just happened to be, like I said, a little on the anal side and just made the handles match.
So they flipped my perfectly situated recyclable can around. That's what they did.
Yeah.
You would do that? Now, I have picked up a neighbor's can. I have handled the neighbor's can because I have elderly neighbors on the one side. Well, I guess probably on both, but and often they have one of those smaller size cans. Like you can get like a half size can, which is probably what I should have. But and that can is often lying in their driveway, you know, not upright. And when I see that, I typically get out and I lift up their can and I leave it in that spot. I don't move it in their driveway. I just lift it up so that they don't have to bend down and lift up a topsy-turvy can.
Stalker.
But they would never do I don't think that they would do that for me. They don't. We don't know each other, but I just know that they're elderly.
Maybe there's a neighbor who's quite much younger than you who has a similar view.
Okay. You know what? Right now, this game show, this is the first and last episode of Does Jonna Have a Stalker? You know what? It's not fun for me anymore. It is no longer fun.
Yeah. Carol.
That person probably ruined it for everybody. Ruined it for everyone.
We just sucked the air out of that story now, didn't we?
Oh my God.
You guys have something to talk about. Yeah. Oh boy.
Oh my gosh.
Not fun anymore.
Oh no. Button pushed. Oh, I think I just made a boo-boo. I think I just completely blew her happiness by making her think this. Yep.
you just may have.
But not to worry, Jonna, because there's always something you can do. Because, you know, we really are hardwired to be happy.
And there it is.
Oh, there it is indeed.
There it is. All right. I guess I'm back.
Nicely done there, Pesky.
Once again. So coming up after the break, as luck would have it, we are going to be speaking with Ashish Kothari. He is the author of his latest book, aptly entitled Hardwired for Happiness, 9 Proven Strategies to Overcome Stress and Live Your Best Life. And I guess we really need to talk to him. We don't just want to talk to him. We need to talk to Ashish Kothari, which we will do after this break.
All right. That sounds good. That is what we've got on the way with Jonna Spillbor and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry, and we will be back with segment number 2 and our guest. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
Hello again, and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spillbor and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now, as in segment 2, we have a guest, as we always do. And Jonna, we have Ashish Kothari with us today.
Yes, we do. Say that 10 times fast. Kidding. On the line with, I'm very excited, actually, to talk to Ashish. But because he's written a book, his latest book is entitled Hardwired for Happiness, 9 Proven Strategies to Overcome Stress and Live Your Best Life. So let me tell you a little bit about Ashish Kothari. Ashish is an executive coach, author, consultant, and founder of The Happiness Squad, a company focused on helping individuals and organizations unleash the power of happiness and well-being to achieve their full potential. Ashish's transformational approach, which he covers in the book, Hardwired for Happiness, outlines an easy-to-follow recipe that can help anyone increase joy, health, love, and meaning in their lives. His transformational approach integrates science and spirituality. This is going to be a fascinating read. Ashish Kothari, welcome to Happy Hour. It's as if your book was written for this show.
Thank you for having me, Jonna and Carol. Really wonderful to be here with you.
So we want to dive into your book, which is, again, entitled Hardwired for Happiness, 9 Proven Practices to Overcome Stress and Live Your Best Life. And I want to tell you out of the gate, because I've waded into the book, you have what I'm describing as almost a scientific approach to how people can be happier. And that's exciting, because I think right now, Ashish, we are living in a time when most people should be feeling elated, right? We're coming out of this unprecedented global pandemic. We should be excited. We should feel refreshed. We should feel renewed. And just my feeling, I haven't taken any surveys, is that people are feeling exactly the opposite. Like, we're feeling this sense of doom and gloom, even though we just came out of a period of doom and gloom. And it's important for people to figure out how to mentally get back to a place or get to a new place where we do feel rejuvenated and happy. And according to your book, these are things that are that our brain is hardwired to do. So let's dive into that. Like, for starters, how can people feel happier when we're feeling like, you know, all around us is doom and gloom?
Yeah, wonderful. Great question, Jana. And look, I think what you are sensing is actually true, right? All surveys, we have looked at this extensively. I looked at it at my prior firm, McKinsey. Tons of people outside are doing these surveys. Stress, anxiety, and burnout are at an all-time high. 40 to 60% of people report stress, anxious, fatigued, you know, and not at their best. And this is despite the fact that we are coming out of a pandemic, despite the fact that we are living in a time where prosperity is at an all-time high. We are more prosperous than ever before as a generation. We are living longer than ever before, thanks to advances in medical technologies. And yet, we are not necessarily living healthier and more joyful lives in those years that we are actually gaining back, right? We also are more connected than ever, more connected than we would want to be. And yet, we are more isolated as individuals, and we are more polarized in countries. 10% of Americans report in the latest surveys not having a friend at all.
In wow. Their,
nobody close, right? 60% report feeling lonely. And that number is up from like 48%, by the way, right? And so you ask the question, why on one hand are we living in a world that is so prosperous, advances that can keep us safe and live longer, keep us more connected? Why is this happening? Well, how do you make sense of it? And, you know, I came into this answer as I was researching the science of flourishing. What makes us flourish? I found this answer from the world of neurosciences. And what I found was that our brains, Jana, as you said, we can be hardwired for happiness, but our current wiring is actually for one, for fear. Now you might say, wow, hardwired for fear. Why are we hardwired for fear? And so we have to go back in time, right? So if you look at our brains evolved over millions of years to keep our bodies safe and secure. They became these amazing prediction-making machines to spot the carnivorous threat outside and either prepare us to attack it and have it for dinner, a tiger that was in the, you know, hiding in the bushes, if there was enough of us around, or run away and not get eaten for dinner, right? So we're all lucky descendants of people whose fight, flight, freeze mechanisms and this prediction-making mechanisms, spotting danger in the environment, were really, really good. So that's good. That's why we got to the top of the food chain. You know, we are not stronger. We are not larger than most other animals around, but we are, quote unquote, the king of or the queen of the jungle. So what's happened? Well, what's happened is we've created a world that has grown more complex than our ability of our brain to handle it. You see, the world we live in today, Jana and Carol, doesn't look anything like the world that our brains and bodies evolved over. There are no tigers roaming around every day that we run into, but we do have our threats in this world that is more volatile, more uncertain, which poses threats to our psychological identity. You know, an ecological disaster, the hurricane down in Florida last couple of weeks, a shooting in a neighborhood, the war that's undergoing, doom and gloom news from the Fed around the interest rates that we're experiencing and the depression that we might get into, you know, issues at work, right? Supply chain issues, all of these, we are swimming in this, and every one of them invokes in us a fear of we're not going to make it. And our brain responds in exactly the same way. It responds in exactly the same way as if it was a tiger. We are pumped with adrenaline and cortisol multiple times in a day. Our bodies aren't designed for that. And they start to break down. Our brains aren't designed to also have this overload of adrenaline and cortisol. So we experience heaviness. We experience anxiety. We experience stress. And as a result that we don't get enough coping, you know, we experience heaviness. That's why we are where we are. the world has gotten more complex. We are hardwired for fear. However, where lies the problem, lies the solution. What we also know from neurosciences is that neurons that fire together, wire together. So we do have the ability, we absolutely have the ability to hardwire ourselves for happiness, which is what this book is about. How we can hardwire, how we can do things, practice things that will result in happiness ensuing because we are integrating them into our world, into our lives, and into our brains.
Ashish, can I ask you this? Because I think everybody within sound of our voice would love to have their brains on autopilot in a way that makes them feel good versus where we kind of feel like right now we're on autopilot in a way that makes us feel bad. And so when a person is interested in, quote, hardwiring their brain for happiness, is it something that you have to make an effort to do every day, or is it something that eventually can be almost second nature so that you do wake up happy and you don't go to the worst case scenario? Is there a way to get to that point?
So look, I would answer it this way. I purposefully call them practices. So practice is something.
Telling me.
Right? It's what we practice, we become. And look, overall, as we integrate this, yes, we will be happier, Jonah. We will be happier, Kara. We can increase our happiness, right, overall. But it is about showing up to the mat and integrating and practicing this. We will experience lightness. But you know what? I always say there is no light without the dark. There is not joy without suffering. So it's not that we won't experience unhappy, hard moments, because that's what life serves us. But by truly learning to master our inner worlds, we can break away from the effects that the external world has on us.
So in your book, and actually in the title of your book, you have 9 proven practices to overcome stress and live your best life. So if somebody is feeling the pressure right now and they're listening to you and they want to pick up your book, is there something they can do today to start hardwiring their brain to feel better? Like what are the first couple of things that you would suggest?
Absolutely. So listen, the heart of the 9 practices, I think 8 of the other practices actually rest on this, is the practice of self-awareness. It is true, this old adage by Anais Nin, we see the world as we are, not as the world is. Right? We all are unique observers of the world. And we see the world based on an interplay between 3 key domains: language, so beliefs, what we hold as true, what we hold as fundamentally, you know, we've learned from our cultures, what's right, what's wrong, what's dark, what's light, what's fair, what's unfair. All of those inform how we make sense of the world. Our mood states in which we wake up. Are we sad? Are we depressed? Are we resentful? Are we joyous? They affect how we experience the world, what happens in the world. And then the third is our bodies. Are we exhausted? Have we slept enough? How are we feeling nourished? Are we tired? Trauma, old trauma can get stuck in our bodies, right? Emotions get stuck in our bodies and become, you know, they can constrain us. So all of these make us a unique observer, and we see it this way. Oftentimes, we're really good at coming up with catastrophizing the worst story about what's happening. The worst intent.
Oh, I don't have any friends that do that. Not even Jana. She never does that.
I don't know anyone.
Exactly, right? So we all do that. Look, we are wired to do that. Because if we didn't do that in the past, we wouldn't survive, right? But that's not the world we're living in right now. And so 2 simple things that we could do right away. The first is just get curious about what standard am I basing my assessment on? Why am I assessing this to be fair? What is my standard? And can I validate that with 2 or 3 other people? Do they also feel that my assessment is correct? And I think that can have a big unlock. By the way, if we don't have anybody to talk to about that right away, we can try a second trick that came from many of the researchers at Harvard. This notion of holding 3 stories at the same time. So we do have a story about the catastrophizing. It's good, it serves us. We should think about that and plan for the outcome that if that does happen, and then put it away in a shelf. we should, in parallel, think about two other stories about what might actually happen or what might be behind what we are experiencing, right? If somebody didn't return a phone call over 2 days after a meeting in which might not have gone well, you know, maybe they just got busy. Maybe there's something that happened in their life that is taking all their attention. It doesn't have to be that they actually are mad at us. And by the way, that notion of two other possibilities can reduce, it can help us de-identify from that thought that is kind of really running continuously in our mind.
Can I just pause you for a second? I want to make sure I understand you clearly and break it down simply for people who have simple minds like me. So it's common, and I can totally relate to exactly what you're saying. Like, it's like the boss says, like, can you come see me at 2? And like, you're like, oh no.
Oh my God, yeah.
So that is normal to like think about the worst case scenario, and a way to lessen that fear, that nervousness, that impact on us, that worst case scenario has is an imagination. It's part of our imagination. Yes. Is to come up with two simple alternatives. Well, could also be this, could also be that. That's it, right?
That's it. Beautiful. Exactly, Kara. Two other stories about what might happen. And I would say, think about if indeed your worst case happens, what would you do about it? Like, write it down, you know, just write it down. And by writing it down, we can put it on paper and stop letting our brain constantly run on it, right? And come up with two other options. So really, really powerful practice can reduce 80% of the anxiety, you know, because most anxiety comes from us catastrophizing about the future and about one future. And we know there are a multitude of futures that are possible. The other practice that is so transformative that people can start to do right away is actually the practice of gratitude. And Carol, you write about this so much in the books that you've covered.
Yes.
What we pay attention to today, truly, we are living in a world where so many of our cups are full, but we don't spot them, you know, and again, it comes from how our brains have evolved. There is a process called hedonic adaptation that neuroscientists and psychologists talk about at length. You know, it's not that known in common world, but we experience that. The hedonic adaptation is about once we get something, it loses its utility to excite us anymore.
I can't relate. That's why I have
that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wanted the iPhone 13 and then 14 came out and I didn't like start wanting that to exact. Yeah, I was so satisfied with my 13, especially comparing it to the Nokia, which the first one that I got, and all it did was press buttons, right? But look, it's evolutionary. You know, 20,000 years ago, if we settled down with what we had, you know, food was not that abundant. It wasn't five steps away in a retail store I could go pick, right? It might go days without finding something. So yeah, you eat, you enjoy, but you start looking again. And we're still living as if we are stuck in that primitive world. We are, right? So this notion of paying attention, I would invite your readers, your listeners to actually Google this beautiful article that Helen Keller wrote called 3 Days to See. It is written in the 30s. And, you know, every time I read it, it sends shivers down my body. Because wow. She talks about the simple miracle of sight and how so many of us who are blessed with sight don't appreciate it and don't see the wonders in our world. And she talks about in this article how, you know, just through the sight, through sound, she can experience so much of the world around us. So how can a friend, she's talking about a friend who has come through this beautiful walk in a forest, and she asked, what did you see? And our typical answer that she gave, which is so true even today, is, oh, no, nothing. It was just a walk.
And so she's part of that, too. So the gratitude for the simplest things is powerful.
Yes.
But I think also it ties into being present to your experience. So that you're walking through the forest, but your mind isn't thinking about what you need to pick up at the grocery store or what did you forget to do. So that practice, and again, I know that word practice, to constantly bring yourself to the present moment, to fully experience it.
Absolutely. Right? So the practice of mindfulness, Carol, that you talk about, right, is another practice that is so paramount. Look, the research, again, right, that has been done, over 50% of the time, our mind is wandering. And a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. Because guess where it wanders to? By the way, that number is quite high, right, for many other people. It might be 70, 80% of the time. So where does it wander to, Carol?
Past or future.
Past or future. And what does it think about when it goes to the past?
Sadness, regret.
Yeah, because
mostly.
Exactly, right? Because again, when we were sad, when we were, you know, angry, when somebody did something, there is a learning there that the brain is trying to process. How do I make sure this doesn't happen again? And when it goes to the future, where does it go?
Worry.
Because again, I'm trying to predict what's going to come get me, right? So 50 to 70% of the time, we are creating our own psychological suffering, completely missing the beauty in the world around us right now. And by the way, this has gotten much worse over the last 20 years. We have truly become dopamine addicts. You know, an average person checks their phone 80, 90 times a day. And they're waking up.
That sounds low, truthfully.
Yeah, right? We're like in an elevator and we can't just stand anymore. If you're in a queue, we've got our, you know, it's amazing to me. I'm riding the train and everybody's got their phones on. It reminds me of this Riddler, you know, a Batman movie, a very bad Batman movie, but with these Riddler devices that just sucked our brainwaves. And that's what we've become. We've become zombies. Right? Everybody's looking at their black screens and we are not experiencing anything around us. In fact, if we don't, we feel so anxious just sitting with ourselves and experiencing the world. That we'll resort to, you know, we'll resort to crazy things. So I'll tell you about this crazy study again, another study that was done by psychologists that bring to life how extreme this has become. So they asked, you know, a large number of people to just sit in a room, okay? And the room was basically a white room, so there was nothing there. It was about a 15 to 20 minutes that they were asked to sit. And they actually had a choice. They could sit for 15 to 20 minutes there. They weren't given any instructions, right? So they were like, you can sit here or you can play with this device that they did tell them gave very painful shocks.
Oh my gosh.
You know, majority of the people would rather administer themselves shocks than to just sit with their own thoughts.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Think about that. In fact, I think there was somebody who actually, there was an extreme case. I think I don't remember the exact number, but it was almost 60 plus times, shocked himself 60 plus times in 15 minutes. We're not used. We've given away that power, you know, Carol and Jonna and Frankenberry. We've given away that power to just be in the moment, just experience the wonders the way they are.
I think we need to get it back. I strive for that. In fact, Jonna and another good girlfriend of ours and me all each year pick a word to live by. And last year, my word was be, just to like be in the present. But I want to circle around to something that you said, because we talked about the problem, but I'm not sure we spent enough time on the solution, that our brains are wired that to not be as present. And when you're present, you have significantly less stress on you.
Yes.
When you're in the past, most of us are regret, sadness, ruminating. And when we're in the future, we're typically on worrying. And I think it's key to pause there and point out that that is a chosen response.
Yes.
And
yes.
That when we catch ourselves doing that, and this comes back to your first point of self-awareness, that we can say, okay, I'm stuck in the past here. How about instead I recall one of my favorite memories? How about I recall something that made me laugh? Or if you catch yourself in the future worrying, that's when you can use your three stories thing. How else could this turn out? Let me find two other alternatives. So we can wire ourselves, I guess, directly to that our default mode.
Exactly. And I would say even, you know, I would build on that. Look, I think there is something that we're all blessed with that can only happen in the moment. And that is breathe.
Mm-hmm.
We can't breathe in the past. We can't breathe for the future. We can only breathe in the moment. And our bodies are here in the moment. Our mind is somewhere else. So by even as simple as, one, becoming aware what I'm feeling in my body, am I feeling anxiety, am I breathing deeply? And second, just putting our attention on our breath. And 3 to 5 deep breaths is oftentimes enough to activate our parasympathetic system, to start to calm our bodies, start to kind of ground in this feeling of just being here. And I think that's something, you know, we can do. You know, look, I always tell people, look, you can meditate, but there's so many people I coach a lot of executives, and I love this word that one of them said. You know, he said to me, Ashish, I know I should be mindful, but my mind is too full.
Oh my gosh, that is great.
My mind is too full. So I said to him, Joe, so I won't tell you to meditate because I know you won't do it. But how about every other hour, just for a minute, plant your feet, sit straight, close your eyes, and take 6 breaths. Can you do that for yourself?
Yep.
6 breaths. By the way, that technique is now being used by doctors in hospitals, in nursing, in teachers, in the army, every place, you know, where we experience a highly triggered sympathetic system, to consciously just bring that soothing power of experiencing just being here and now. It's available to us all. We can do it.
Yes. And you don't need to do it for an hour. You need to do it for a minute, right? Or two, and get the benefits from it.
In fact, one of my dear friends actually came up, right? Brilliant guy. His name is Marty Borenson. I'm actually going to see him next week. He actually created a really cool app. It's actually free. So people can download it. It's called OMM. OM. OMM stands for One Moment Meditation.
Oh, wow.
It's literally a timer with 1 minute. You don't have to. You can just put a timer on your phone too. But this one just ends with a beautiful meditation bell, right? Yeah. So it's more soothing than the jarring of the timer going off.
Yes. I don't know about that, Ashish. Yeah, that's like you're trying to lasso the moon, asking people to look away from their phones for a minute and breathe at the same time. Holy crap.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I always say around training ourselves to be in the moment is the following. Look, if we, you know, we all work, if we can literally find 8 hours in a week, you spread it the way you want. But in those 8 hours, turn off all notifications, turn off your phone, turn off everything else, but focus almost on the task that you're doing. Yeah. You know, I did this with a company where there was a large IT team, and we gave them this challenge. We said, listen, we're not going to tell you how to do it. You can choose a whole 8 hours. We would suggest you don't, because it's just really hard for 8 hours to do one thing. You could break it into 4 2-hour. You can break it into, you know, 5 or 6 90-minute things. You do it. You can do it in the morning. You can do it in the afternoon. You do whenever. But block that time and do it. You know what happened? Stress levels went down. Productivity went up by 30%. 30%, that one simple thing.
I believe it. Ashish, we have to wrap up, but this has been incredible. And I strongly recommend, and I love, so I'm actually in the book right now, and I'm looking at the diagram of the flower, which really kind of breaks this down in such an easy way. We've been talking with Ashish Kothari, author of Hardwired for Happiness, 9 Proven Practices to Overcome Stress and Live Your Best Life. And Ashish, if somebody wants to connect with you, obviously they can get the book anywhere, right? They can get that on Amazon or from your website. How can people connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I think the easiest way would be to go to our website. It's Happiness Squad. There are 3 S's in the middle there. HappinessSquad.com. They can also find me on LinkedIn. I also post, you like this, Jonah and Carol and Frankenberry. Every morning, you know, recognizing that we are constantly blasted with, you know, news and to-dos, what I do is every morning on my Instagram page, My Happiness Squad, you know, we post a 60 to 90 second reading from some text. Psychology, spirituality, some teacher, East, West, Stoicism, Buddhism, that just invites us to bring a different intention into our day, a question that we can live into. So they can always follow that. It's on. It's called My Happiness Squad is the Instagram handle. But all of those ways are ways in which people can find me. And I really do feel, I hope that your listeners get a copy of the book, because it's not enough to know them. What transforms us to be more joyous is the practices, and that we practice. And that's what they will find in the book.
Very true.
And also, just on a side note, because I got the book, and you also can, if you get the book, you can connect directly to the Happiness Squad and become part of that community. This has been a great talk with you, Ashish Kothari. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for this amazing work that you're doing in helping people live happier, healthier lives and kinder lives. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Yes. And Ashish, I wanted to let you know that Carol had mentioned that she and some of the ladies every year, they pick a word to try to live by for the rest of the year. I'm going to try not to have my word be catastrophizing. Okay. even though I am now in love with that word, because I haven't quite heard it, you know, catastrophe used that way before, but I'm going to try not to use that as my word for this coming year.
Oh, I feel a blog post coming up, Frank and Perry.
Ashish, thank you so much for joining us. That was great. And we will be right back. We still got segment number 3 on the way here with Jonas Spilborn and Carol Pesci and myself. So please stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Jonna and Carol.
Good morning one more time, and welcome back to happy hour here with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Mary.
She's still mad at us.
Is she still mad from segment 1?
I think so. I think she is. And even though we just talked to Ashish and Jonna should be hardwired for happiness, she ain't hardwired for that right now.
Doesn't feel like it.
No,
Nah, she's just wired. She's just wired and hard. Wired hard. Well, no, because even though I hide it well, you made a comment, Curly, earlier that because I have in the past been nice to my elderly neighbors, that maybe my whole thing here is that somebody thought I was an elderly neighbor and touched my hand.
Right? Yes. Jonna, that is the strangest use of all the uses that we had as hands earlier this morning. All the different possible innuendos that they thought because I might be elderly that they touched my cans.
Right. So listen, so speaking of being a paranoid freak, right? So what's been happening kind of behind the scenes here is I was expecting a package from FedEx that required a signature. And the reason why I made a point to be alert and wait for the FedEx person to deliver this package is because when I get a notice that somebody needs my signature on a FedEx package, instead of going to something normal, like, oh, maybe it's booze, I went to, oh, maybe I'm getting sued. So I made sure I went to that worst case scenario, and I wanted to make sure, because I did not know where this package was coming from, who sent it, why it was being sent. I just knew I needed to sign for it. So as luck would have it,
it was booze.
The FedEx person arrived. And it is apparently a bottle of booze. I have not opened the box. And this FedEx, she's a woman. She's like, I deliver to you all the time. And I'm saying to myself, well, then why didn't you just drop it? You know how old I am. You know I'm not under 21. But I didn't say that. So she goes, okay, so you signed for it. And unfortunately, I need your birth date. So I go.
Oh, here we go. She lied.
I go, 8. She goes, yeah. I go, 12. Yeah. And then I go, put down 1976.
Put down.
And she goes, instead of being like, oh, okay. She goes, sure. We'll go with that. And I was like,
I think that's hysterical.
That's not a UB. That's funny. And if she did it with a little bit of a wink and a nod, that would be even better.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she winked and she nodded. But you know what? That's my age and I'm sticking to it.
Well, it's funny because that's exactly what Ashish was talking about, was we create this worst case scenario story. You are getting sued. But you could come up with two alternatives. One, it's wine or alcohol. Two, it's new shoes. Right. And right.
Or three, you were born in 1976. Yeah.
Which I was. I would like to know. Yeah, I should not. And I thought about it. My rational brain said, well, wait a minute. If FedEx requires a, quote, adult signature, and the only thing I could see on the tracking is that the package was coming from Napa, putting two and two together. What do you think? Do you think it's a lawsuit or do you think it's a bottle of vino? I should have went with vino.
Yeah. I'm thinking so. But yeah, your paranoia really took over on that one, didn't it?
But now I'm dying to know who sent it. I guess I'll look in the box. I did not order anything for myself.
Oh, you didn't order it? Oh.
No.
Okay.
No. So again, we got garbage can stalker and we have a mystery bottle of wine. Should I open it?
Unless they're tied together. Unless whoever fixed your garbage cans also sent you wine.
Oh, I got it. You guys, I got it. I got the whole mystery figured out. Here it is. Okay. So yes, there is a much younger person in my neighborhood who wanted to be nice to me because the only way he can get booze is if he ordered it and had it delivered to my house because he knows I'm old enough. And then he's going to come knock on the door and go, hey, lady, I fixed your garbage cans. Did you happen to get a delivery of booze? Because that's for me and my 19-year-old girlfriend. Can I have it? I got it. Got it all figured out.
I'm going to show them.
I'm going to drink it before he can show up here looking for his BS bootleg bottle of wine.
And now we have story. Now we have story number three.
There we go. That's all. I'm out of story.
Alternate reality. Now. No, we got that's enough. You got enough of them.
Yeah, yeah. No,
you're good.
You can be storied out. That's fine. We're good.
I am.
Okay. Well, I guess that's going to that'll wrap things up for us today here on Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. And thank you so much again to Ashish Kothari for joining us and telling us how we are hardwired for happiness and how to go about, you know, realizing that, I guess.
Rewiring ourselves.
Yes, or rewiring. Yes, good way to put it. And we will be back again next week with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself and another edition of Happy Hour. So please join us again here. Same time then, and until then, have a good and a safe week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.